Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And for the second hour of today's show, I have a guest who's going to be talking about some quite heartbreaking stories about childcare, foster care, orphanages in Australia, and what it was like and what it continues to be like for children who have essentially become the property of the state. The state in our system seems to just regard these kids as their property, to do with as they see fit. Of course, it's always claimed that this is in their best interest or for the greater good. And of course, when mistakes are made, usually they try to dodge admitting it. But when they do admit it, it's often just that's it. You know, we do our best, we fail. It's just this constant kind of refusal to engage with the reality and the responsibility and the real abuses that occur that are actually far worse than just mere neglect or institutional neglect. Now, my guest, Gabriel Phillips Short, is on the line. Gabriel, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Herwood. Great to be here.
Yeah, look, it is a great pleasure and a great honour to have you on. And, of course, your rally, which was a national rally around the country, took place yesterday on Wednesday, February the 6th. How did it go, Gabriel? Was there a reasonable turnout?
Well, it wasn't too bad considering it was our first national rally, because some of us have rallied in different states at different times, but this time we decided to get everybody together, and instead of all trying to go to one place, let's do it in different states of Australia. Now, we got them in South Australia, Victoria, New South Wales, Canberra and Queensland. So that wasn't bad for our first rally. But we are growing in numbers, and the next one will be in 3 months' time.
Yeah, look, and I would have loved to have been able to attend one of those. I'm pretty busy during the day. Was not able to. Where was the rally in Sydney? Just out of curiosity.
At Parliament House, Sydney.
Parliament House, Sydney. Yeah. And
Melbourne, South Australia, Brisbane, and Canberra. Parliament House.
Okay. Yeah, I did actually attend one similar event a couple of years ago. It might have been a little different to what you've organised, but it was some mothers who've had kids taken away from them by Department of Community Services, and I actually interviewed some of them on this show. And you know what I found is that, I mean, obviously these people aren't perfect. Some of them have made mistakes. I'm not going to say they're perfect parents, but the point is that the procedures that the government follows, they seem to be dishonest and they don't follow correct procedure. I mean, in one case, I remember that a child was taken away and kept without any due procedure, without any court appearances or anything, for about 8 months. And I mean, I was just absolutely staggered that that's even possible, that the Department of Community Services could come in, take your kid, and you don't even get a right of reply and can't do anything about it for 8 months. Have you seen much of that kind of thing?
Well, to be honest, there are a lot of forgotten Australians that I talk to who have been in the system themselves, and some think, later in life they suffer from a little bit of depression because of all the trauma they've gone through.
Yeah.
So they need extra help. They will go to a social worker, and as soon as the social worker finds out that they've been in the system, that's it. They have their children taken off them. So the worst thing they really ever did was to go to the social worker, because straight away you're discriminated against if you've already been in the system. How cruel is that?
Yeah, and because they're supposed to be there to help people. That's their job. They're supposed to be there to help you. But if you go to them for help, they will just punish you.
Especially if they find out that you've been in institutions as a child.
Yeah.
Or it could be poverty. It could be the slightest little thing. But then there are cases, and I mean, I'm sure you would have heard of them. They've actually shown them on Current Affair, where the kids are in dire need.
Yes.
You know, that just the conditions that they live in, and yet they refuse to take those children away.
Isn't that strange?
So it contradicts, And so sometimes you'll get somebody with a small problem who'll have their children stolen.
Yes.
Then you'll have a child who really does need help, and they don't help. They leave that child in that condition, and then it often happens that that child ends up dying.
Incredible. Yes, I've noticed that.
I wonder how they work this out.
I mean, often people say, you know, when you bring this up and say, well, you know, it's really terrible that a lot of kids are being forcibly removed without due process, people often bring up these horrendous stories about, as you say, families where the children were totally neglected. And yet that's just the flip side of it. I mean, is it just incompetence? Is it just that they're incredibly incompetent? So sometimes they're overly zealous and they just step in the full weight of the law when it's not even appropriate. At other times, they don't even react. I mean, why are they so hopeless?
Well, one wonders. This is what I mean. Maybe it depends on who the social workers are. You know, maybe some are just, I can't think of the word for it, but they're overprotective.
Yes.
And then there are some who just don't care and leave that child in that situation.
Right, right.
You know, it's really hard to say, Herwood. I mean, I rack my brain all the time about this kind of thing. It's just hard to comprehend.
I mean, we're dealing here with people who've got a good education, they've got degrees, they're supposed to be trained, they're supposed to be competent, they're supposed to have a minimum amount of common sense, and yet, what is it? It's something about the government system, the nanny state system, that just seems to turn everything into stupidity. And within that stupidity, real abuse occurs. Within that incompetence, I mean, I wouldn't let them off the hook. It's wicked and it's evil. But it seems to flow from their own hopeless incompetence. I mean, what's your take on that?
They might have all these degrees on paper, but they lack compassion and empathy. Honestly, they're people who've been brought up totally different to the common person. You know, they go to university, that's great. They learn psychology, they learn everything in theory, but when it comes to practice, they've got no idea. They really do not empathise with people living in poverty, people who really are destitute. You know, I mean, there are a lot of forgotten Australians living on the streets at the moment. Like, if you actually went down to the streets of Melbourne and you talked to a lot of people over 50, you would find that most of them have been in the system.
Right, right. Mm. So that once they've been tarred with that brush,
Yeah, everything's so hidden.
Yeah.
In other countries, it seems to be more out in the open, but in Australia, it's all hidden.
It's like
hiding everything.
Okay. And it's like we've got a class, there's an underclass of people who are these kind of institutionalized people. And I guess it includes the prison system too. I mean, do you find that it also extends into people who end up in prison?
Well, a lot of the kids brought up in the institutions, they were thrown out onto the street. Now, many of them had spent probably a good 15 years of their life in institutions.
Yeah.
Once they came of age, they threw them out in the street. They had no one to turn to, nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of the girls ended up in prostitution. A lot of the boys ended up in crimes, having to steal for money to survive.
Yeah.
So they get thrown in prison, spend the rest of their lives in prison.
Of course.
It's just ongoing.
It's a continuum. Now, look, I'd just like to read here from the article here you posted on Facebook about your rally. It states here, we, the forgotten Australians, survivors of institutional foster care and out-of-home care, and all victims of abuse, request your presence on the 6th of February 2013 at our gathering of forgotten Australians. Our aims are to peacefully yet firmly protest for the federal government to hold a royal commission into the criminal abuse and all forms of abuse that were inflicted on a large majority of the 500,000 children raised in orphanages and children's homes, institutions and foster care during the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s. What we would like to see included in this Royal Commission is an investigation into all forms of child abuse. And you've documented some specific forms of abuse here. Systematic rape. Forcing children to undergo invasive procedures, including but not limited to procedures involving a children's genitals, the experimentation of Depo-Provera and other drugs and skin grafting. Now, Gabriel, I'm going to have to get you to explain that because my mind is boggling and I don't even quite understand it. Can you expand on that?
Which one are you talking about? Skin grafting?
Systematic rape. Well, let's go through the invasive procedures. What sort of invasive procedures were performed on kids?
Forcing children to go for internal examinations. I know of many 9, 10, 11-year-olds up to 18-year-olds who were forced to go for internal. Now, I was forced myself when I was 14. I had run away from an institution.
Yeah.
Because it got to the stage where I couldn't handle it any longer, I was put in a detention centre.
Right.
Now, the procedure was you had to go for an internal. Now, I had never been with a boy in my life.
Yeah.
I was brought up in a convent. I didn't know very much. Now, this went against my religious beliefs and everything.
Right.
I was forced to go for this. I fought all the way. They dragged me in, laid me on the table. One of the staff laid right across me and forced me to go through with all of that.
So
and I don't want to be too personal, but I have to explain this. When I got back to Winlayton, I was bleeding.
Really?
And that knocked me about for a good 2 or 3 weeks because I felt that I wasn't going to heaven. It sounds silly now,
yeah,
but coming from a convent and having to be forced to go through that, that psychologically affected me, and it still does now to this day.
How old were you at that time?
No, just one example.
Yeah, sure. Were you a teenager at that time, or?
Yeah, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
But I'm just using mine because that was my experience. But
sure.
I know that so many around me went through that same thing.
Sure, sure. And now, Sorry, please continue.
It was very common. You know, they would use the excuse, "Oh, exposed to moral danger. Oh, you might get pregnant." You know, all that sort of thing to test if you were pregnant, to see if you had VD, syphilis, all these things. That was their excuse. And most of the children I'd grown up with had never been near boys. Well, we never had a chance.
Yeah, yeah. So these were medical examinations that went into a lot of, right into your, all parts of your body. So basically, these were essentially medical examinations, were they?
Oh, yeah, well, that's what they say, but who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
They could have been their own experiments. You had the Depo-Provera.
Yes, and what is
which
that?
Which was controversial. That was a contraceptive drug.
Right.
Now, before they put that out on the market, the main market, they tested it on the girls in the institution, and that is a fact.
Gabriel, we're just going to break. I want to talk more about the experimentation of birth control drugs. That's a very important one. We'll be right back after this short break here with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. And today my guest is Gabriel Phillips Short, who is telling us about some of the abuse that is commonplace among children who are in state care, in government care, whether that be in orphanages or foster care. And she has organised a rally, which actually took place yesterday around the country in Australia, to draw attention to that. A lot of it is based on experiences of people over a longer period of time, going back to the 1950s. But I do believe the abuses are ongoing, and I want to get more into what's actually happening now before we finish the show today. But Gabriel, can we just continue there? You were talking about the experimentation of birth control drugs. So can you just run us through what happened there?
Fortiprovera.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, did I interrupt you there?
No, please, go ahead, sorry.
And what they did was they used, well, I know they used it on girls in Winlayton. I think they may well have used it on a lot of girls in the Good Shepherd Convent, and maybe some of the 12 and 13-year-olds in the other orphanages. Now, this was all new back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Indeed.
And it was a drug. Look, I'm not a medical expert here, but I do know it was an injection.
Right.
And it would last for 3 months.
Right.
Now, I remember many of the girls feeling sick. After they'd had this injection, they never were the same.
Really?
Some of them had pretty bad side effects. Some of them seemed to go on and were okay. But they were trialling these before they put them on the main market to see if they were safe enough to put them on the main market.
Incredible.
So, you know, I mean, it was okay to experiment on these children because they were the property of the state.
Now,
so one of them, they could cover it up.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I've heard a number of stories about this type of thing. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's pretty serious, and they want to cover this up. And we've been fighting for years about all these. Well, to me, it's like going back to what they were doing on the Jews. And then once the war was over, they needed other subjects. And I suppose, well, this is just my opinion. They probably looked around and, the kids in the orphanages. Yeah, and this would have happened all over the world. So we became the next subjects for their experimentations.
Well, yes, I've heard a number of stories around the world about this type of thing. I know in the US a number of experimental AIDS drugs were trialled on kids in government care. And this was exposed on mainstream news. Have you heard about that at all?
I've heard a little bit about it, yeah, I have, but to be honest, I'm not an expert, and I've only read bits and pieces.
I also know that in Israel, the Israeli government experimented with radiation on small children that were in government care, who were actually orphans who were brought from Morocco. They were like Jews from the north of Africa who were in government care in Israel. And there's a fantastic little documentary about that called The Ringworm Children, which is really worth watching, because these children were horrendously abused. They received very severe radiation burns, and a lot of them couldn't function normally for the rest of their lives. And that's just two examples I know. And I do suspect that when they are trialing vaccines, that kids who are in care would certainly be getting those vaccines, because they're always looking for trial groups. And if you've got a group that's easily accessible, that's the group you're going to trial it on. Do you know much about vaccines?
Look, I don't know a lot. Like I said, I'm not a medical expert.
Yeah.
But I do know that they were actually experimenting on children in the orphanages. This is down in Victoria, on children going back as far as the late 40s, 50s, 60s, right up to the early 70s.
Okay.
And, hang on, I've got an article here.
Yeah.
If you
sure.
don't mind me.
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
It's okay. It's not a real long article. And they have actually admitted this, Herwood, but they've done nothing about it.
Right.
A federal agency, according to The Age, Gary Hughes,
right,
a federal agency used babies in orphanages and children's homes to test new quadruple antigen vaccination that included polio vaccine possibly contaminated with a monkey virus, since linked to cancer. Commonwealth Serum Laboratory records show the trials were carried out on babies as young as 3 months in five institutions between December 1959 and early 1961. Actually, I won't read the whole.
Incredible.
An investigation by the Melbourne Age reported in the Herald at the weekend revealed that millions of doses of Salk vaccine produced by the government-owned CSL between 1956 and 62 were contaminated with monkey virus called SV40. As they were injecting, knowing that this monkey virus was in the ingredients.
Incredible.
I should say contaminated. Yeah, and they were using these on the kids in the baby's homes.
So they're basically just using these kids in the same way you use lab rats or monkeys, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, no different. Because if they died, there was nobody to answer to. There was no parents. There was nobody. Who would know? Some of these kids were left on the orphanage steps.
You mentioned here in Facebook, Gabriel, you say skin grafting. Can you just expand on that at all?
Yeah, that was with the tattoos. Now, what happened was, you know, when I was in the detention centre, there were a lot of girls in there who had tattoos. Now, they weren't bad people, but back then if you had tattoos, you know, you kind of looked down upon. And there was a tattoo program going. And I did have an article, but I should have pulled it out. But it actually talks about how the Winlaton girls were one of the first subjects to be used in this program. Now, I remember many girls coming back, their arms were scarred for life. When we had the last rally in Melbourne, I met up with a few of these girls.
Yeah.
And they cannot wear anything but short sleeves because of the damage. And they said to me, we would have been better off keeping our tattoos.
So these were girls that had tattoos when they were kind of outside of the government system. And then how did they end up getting tattoos?
Some of them weren't actually professional tattoos. Some of them actually did it on themselves while in the institution. Needles and ink and stuff like that. And they actually used these girls and told them, oh, you'll never get a job, all this. So they went along with this.
Oh, really?
But they came back worse.
So
one of them showed me her arms and I just felt like crying. It was sad. So and all her life just had to cover up completely.
So they gave them skin grafts, but it doesn't seem like they did a very good job with it. I mean, if you do a skin graft properly, you don't have a scar.
Well, but this was in the early days. See, anything that was on trial was used first on kids in orphanages, institutions. Well, when I say detention centres, well, it sounds bad, but many of these kids actually came from the orphanages because they ran away. They ran away from a system that was abusing them, and the punishment was to put them in a youth training centre.
Right, okay.
Yeah. You know, and then once the girls get in there, well, you know, by that time they're so emotionally disturbed that they did all sorts of things. You know, as in putting tattoos on themselves. You know, a lot of them cutting their wrists and everything just to escape the violence and the abuse that we were suffering.
Indeed. And these youth training centres, do they still exist?
I think there's one in Melbourne, Tirana. It's a boys' home. I think that's still going. Look, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Tirana was the boys' home back in my day, and Winlaton was the girls' home, and this was in Victoria. But then in New South Wales, you had Parramatta. Now, that was really bad. I mean, young girls having to go in there, they went through the same thing. And then there's Wilson up here, and I'm not sure about the other states. Whether they had detention centres or not, but most of the girls that ended up in there were either from institutions, from babies, or were picked up for exposed to moral danger. No crime, just exposed to moral danger. Yeah.
And
I guess that was more subjects, more guinea pigs.
Indeed. It's always good to have a fresh, you know, batch every now and then as well. Like they probably like to change them every now and then. Same as you do with lab monkeys. You know, you constantly need more. Now, of course, we'll get into this more after the break, Gabriel. But you were brought up in an orphanage. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And did you also go through foster care, or were you in an orphanage right till the end of your schooling?
Yeah, I went in when I was 6 weeks, and I left when I was 17 and a half. And as far as schooling's concerned, we never really had any schooling. Because really? The convent I was in, we didn't go to an outside school until we were in Form 1, which is Year 7 now, and the nuns we had were unqualified teachers, and I have since found that out, because I've done quite a bit of research about the nuns me.
Yeah.
I'm not real articulate, so you have to forgive me.
Gabriel, we're just going to break. Sorry to cut you off. We're just going to break. We'll be right back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. With Truth News Radio. We're talking about child abuse in government care with our guest, Gabriel Phillips Short. Gabriel, you're talking there before the break about your background. You grew up in an orphanage in a convent, and you've said here, as one of the claims that you make here that needs to be investigated by the Royal Commission, you talk about religious brainwashing, extreme physical and psychological and sexual abuse and torture. These are harsh allegations. Is this something that you have a direct experience of in the convent setting that you were raised in?
Yes, I do. Particularly in the first orphanage I was in. I was in a place called Nazareth House in Ballarat, and right. It had a baby's home. And when you turned 5, you went to the girls' home, Nazareth House, or you went to the boys' home, which was right next door to it. Now, I remember my very, very first memory. I'm only guessing here that I was about 2.5. And we all had to line up on these pots.
Right.
And do number ones, number twos.
Yeah.
Number twos was not that simple. You know, it just didn't happen when you wanted it to.
Yeah, of course.
And the nun would keep coming in and out. And if you hadn't done it by a certain time, she would belt the hell out of you. And I remember her grabbing me and grabbing me by the hair, pushing my head between her knees, with a stick, belting me on the backside. Then she suddenly kneed me, flung me backwards.
Oh, my God.
And I fell on my cot, and the urine went all over the floor.
Yeah.
Anyway, she walks out. She comes back in with a rag, kicks me, and tells me to clean it up. I'm guessing about 2.5 because that's the earliest I can remember. And I was sobbing and I was crying. And I remember looking up at her, begging her to stop.
Yeah.
You know? And then she got me by the back of the hair and rammed my face into the urine.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
So that's my first memory, Herward.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've got one of those memories. Sometimes I wish that I didn't have a good memory, because I know a lot of people that are brought up in these orphanages have blocked a lot of stuff out.
Yeah, and, you know, you can understand why.
Yeah.
It's not the sort of thing you want to remember, is it?
I remember that. And I often think, back now, I wonder what happened in that first 2.5 years that I don't remember. You know? And then from there, when I turned 5... I went to the girls' home, which was in Ballarat itself.
Yeah.
And, who were just some of the things, the punishments for the bed wetting.
Yeah.
They would rub our face into the sheets until our nose bled.
Really?
You know, we short sheeting our sheets and trying to hide it in the morning because they'd come round and check to see who wet the bed because the whole dormitory would reek of urine.
Yes, of course.
So they knew somebody had wet the bed. And one of the nun teachers, this was one particular time when I was in grade two and I really, really copped it this time. And she said, right, who wet the bed? So we had to stand up on the seat of the desk and then she'd walk up and down the aisles with a stick and she'd poke you because if there were a lot that wet the bed, she'd have to pick certain people out.
Right.
Then you had to, that meant you had to go up to the front of the classroom, right along the blackboard. She had all these buckets of hot water.
Right.
We had to take our shoes and socks off and stand in this hot water. It wasn't hot enough to actually cause blisters, but it was hot. And if you dared to step out of that water, she'd have the stick and she'd go whack. Yeah. And it was funny because years later when I met up with a friend of mine who was there with me, and she was also a victim too, as soon as I knocked on the door, she opened the door and she goes, red socks. Yeah, red socks. Because our ankles, like from our feet to our ankles, would be all red raw after we got out of the bucket.
Yeah, I mean,
that was teaching us not to wet the bed.
I mean, where did they get these medieval ideas from? I mean, was there some book that they were getting this from? What kind of barbaric doctrines were they following?
Well, I think they had mental problems themselves.
Right.
And back in those days too, they, to become a nun was a big thing in your family.
Right.
And then there were some who were obviously forced to join a nunnery. It was a big thing to have a nun or a priest in your family back then. You know, I mean, I look back now and I just look at it all and I think, you know, I'd love to get hold of these people, but some of them are dead, some of them are still alive. Yeah.
So it's really it's a combination of people with severe disorders coming together in institutions. Do you think maybe people are drawn to these institutions who have these type of mental disorders?
Probably. Maybe they can't get married because, see, they suffer from depression, psychotic personalities. Who knows who would? But some of these nuns used to froth at the mouth.
Really?
You know, they used to exhaust themselves when they were belting you. They'd be going with the stick and they'd be puffing and panting and they were just, and then they'd be frothing.
Incredible.
At the mouth at the same time. They were putting so much effort into it, you thought by the time they finished they were going to collapse too.
It's really, it's like a prison setting really, isn't it? I mean, it's not really much different to a prison the way I see it.
Well, I think prisoners do tend to have a few more rights today. But back then, well, it's not like somebody came to us and said, all right, here's your right. You got any complaints, you can report it to this person. We were given nothing. And we didn't know any different either, Herwood. You know, I mean, that was our life. It was like living in a war zone. We lived on fear. Every day of our life, we lived off fear for our life. And I used to think, because we had our heads banged against the walls a lot, and the nuns used to bang our heads together.
Ooh.
And, you know, you'd end up with headaches, concussion. And I remember somebody saying one day that you can die from getting a hit on the head.
You certainly can.
And every time I got a hit on the head, that's it. I'm going to die.
Yeah, So they would bang children's heads together and they would bang children's heads against the wall.
Yeah, they would come up behind you and slam your heads together.
I mean, this is the sort of thing, this is, you would go to prison for a long time for doing this in the law, you know what I mean? As the law, is criminal assault. Of course, there's been all these inquiries into the church with the sexual abuse of children, but what you're talking about here, I haven't really even heard too much about that.
Well, I'm talking about virtually torture.
Yeah.
You know, extreme physical abuse, just for no reason. You know, they would just come up. I mean, we had a priest there who used to come in there. This priest, it turned out years later, he was an actual pedophile.
Right.
He was the chaplain there at Nazareth House, and he was given full rein. He used to come up, get these big hands, and he used to slap you across the face, and he'd knock you right into the wall.
Right.
And then years later, one of my friends rang up and said, oh, Gabby, put the news on. And here's this priest up on all this paedophilia.
Right,
and I
talked
to another priest about him. And I don't know whether he believed me or not. He didn't say anything. So I went and phoned that priest up, and I said, do you remember that priest I told you about? Well, that's him, all over the TV. And he said, oh, really? And I said, yeah. I said, he had full reign at Nazareth House. Yeah, he used to belt the life out of us. And the nuns would just stand by and watch him. Kick, slam you up against the wall, put his hands around your throat, like holding you up against the wall at the same time.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but I'm glad, well, he's in jail now. Well, I can probably say his name because it's public, and that's Father Gerald Ridsdale.
Right, right.
And we think they put him in that home back then because they all knew what he was doing, so they put him in a girls' home. But he ended up molesting some of the girls there.
So,
and the nuns turned a blind eye to it.
So the system basically sheltered people like him and even gave them opportunities to act out their perverted, lustful kind of urges.
Yes. If they had nipped it in the bud, like the first time they heard a priest had done something, yes, and they had the proof, then they should have just stood them down. Put them out of the nunnery, put them out of the priesthood. You know, none of this paying for their legal fees, cancelling, looking after them, giving them a pension, none of that.
Indeed. Okay, we're just going to break, Gabriel. We'll continue with that straight after you with Truth News Radio Australia. Please don't go away. It's a really, really important interview. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It is great to have your company today, and we're talking about a very disturbing subject, the abuse of children in childcare, foster care, and religious organisations. And particularly, we've just heard some really horrendous stuff there about what was going on in the orphanage there run by the church. Now, is that the Catholic Church? Can you just actually elaborate on the church itself and its involvement in all this?
Well, I was raised by they call them the Poor Sisters of Nazareth, but we call them the Cruel Sisters of Nazareth,
right,
which is a Catholic organisation of nuns,
An order of nuns, yes.
And I was also in another convent called St. Hayden's, which was run by the Good Shepherd, and they were the ones that had the laundries. And they do all the towns, you know, like the big companies, the motels and all that. They did their laundries, made money out of us.
Yeah.
Used up child labour. We never got a cent of it, but they profited out of our work. You know, I mean,
yeah,
this is how the Catholic Church worked back then. I sometimes think that they built their empire on the misery of everybody else, including children in institutions.
Indeed. And these are charitable organisations who are tax-deductible.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're considered non-profit, tax-deductible charity organisations who are there to care for the disadvantaged. So their whole purpose in existence is to be there to care for you. But it appears that what these organisations did was to exploit you, and also becomes a vehicle, or they became a vehicle for the sick, twisted mental disorders of the people who were attracted to those organisations for domination and control on a purely you might just have to say disordered, mentally disturbed level.
It's very hard to comprehend, and I still question as to why. And, you know, sometimes, still to this day, I think, what did I do? Even though I've got over a lot, if you knew me when I was in my 40s, I was a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Now I'm good. I can talk about a lot of things, and I can help others that have been through this that it's still coming out of them. You know,
yeah.
I can sit and listen to them, and it sounds cold, but I can switch off emotionally. I've learned to do this. But back then, I used to often say, what have I done wrong? I had no confidence in myself. I suffered from phobias. And if it wasn't for my daughter and a few good friends, particularly my Nazareth House friends, I don't know where I'd be today. I think I'd be in the nut house or probably dead.
Indeed. And so, Gabrielle, you were with the Poor Sisters of Mercy up till the age of 17, is that correct?
No, I was with them till I was 12 and a half. Then I was sent to a government home, and I ran away from there. And then I was put in a Lambie, which is a reception centre
right. In
Melbourne. And then from there, I was sent to St Aidan's, a Good Shepherd convent in Bendigo. And I ran away from there, and then I ended up in Winlaton for running away.
Right.
And if you were a ward of the state when
yep.
you went into Winlaton, you were put in lock for 48 hours with a mattress, a blanket and a pot. On the floor.
Okay.
Didn't matter whether you've been in there all your life in the institution. If you ran away as a ward of the state back then, that was considered a crime. You know that?
So it was considered. It was considered. So it actually became a criminal record on your record.
It was considered a crime against the state. So, you know, like I said, if you had been a ward of the state, you were punished. Another girl could come in there off the street saying she'd never been in an institution. She wouldn't get locked. Because,
right.
See, we were owned by the state.
Right, right.
We were automatically put in 48-hour lock. Yeah.
Incredible.
Didn't have anything, and we were 13, 14-year-old kids.
And so when you finally got out of that whole system, you were 17, what was your life like at that point? What was it like just joining normal society?
It was really, really tough because I was virtually thrown out onto the street. You know, you came of a certain age, they just threw you out. They didn't prepare you for the outside world.
Yeah.
I was institutionalised, and I slept on the Nutterwadding station, which is just up from Winlaton, the first night.
Really?
Because I was shocked, nowhere to go. Yeah, and then I did have a job from there because I was thrown out. This was the hostel part, the pre-release part.
Yeah.
I did down a job. I kept going to work, and then eventually a friend of mine came in and came into work. Oh, sorry, I went from Nutterwadding Station over to Doncaster, and I was sleeping behind a church. And then a friend of mine came in, she happened to live in Doncaster, so I started sharing with her. But then we got thrown out of there because she was prostituting herself in the daytime while I was at work.
Yeah.
So the woman in the front kicked us out. Then I had nowhere to go again. I lived on the streets probably for quite a few weeks in the city, all over the place, but I still continued to go to work. And then one day I rang up one of the wardens from Winlaton, who I knew was really nice,
yeah.
And I just rang up to say hi and everything. And she goes, oh, you're not supposed to be doing this. And I said, oh, okay. And she goes, anyway, what's happening? Then I told her, and she came and picked me up, took me back to live with her for 18 months. Never forgot her.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I just find it incredible, Gabriel, that they let you out without even organising any accommodation for you. Like, they just opened the door and said, now, out you go. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I came home from work one evening and all my little belongings were on the veranda.
Right.
Yeah, Mrs. Thompson from Winlaton had put me out. I mean, look, this was common. This wasn't just me. This was just, well, normal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd 17 and a half years, almost 18, living a regimented life.
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm in the outside world.
Just chucked you out.
Yeah. I do everything by the clock and...
Yeah.
Yeah. But...
Go. Yeah, look, quick question. What do you think these days? I mean, do you think it has changed? I'm just interested to know.
Look,
yeah.
it's different. Like, you don't have the institution, you don't have all the children in one place. You have them spread out in foster care. Same thing, Herbert. You know, some of my friends from the institution, you know, who've fallen on hard times, as soon as they go to get some help, you know, might go to a social worker or wherever, when because they often check out the mothers these days,
yeah.
When they find out that mother has been in an institution, they take the child off them.
Yeah. So there's...
And one girl, they were waiting outside the door while she was in labour to grab her baby.
So they're doing that even now. This is recent.
Oh, yeah. And then they put the kids in foster care, and then you find out that the foster parents are abusing the kids, molesting the kids. Oh, so many stories. My daughter used to bring... There was a couple of girls from her school home because they were being molested by the foster fathers.
Right.
She used to bring them back to my place, and, you know... We did actually report it a couple of times, but nothing was done.
And what of the Poor Sisters of Nazareth? Are they still operating?
Yes, they're still operating, but they mainly work with geriatrics now.
Right.
Because the convent I was in, we had old people, old men, old women, and when we were 6 and 7, we were sent up to the infirmaries where the old people were, and we were used as child labour. We had to clean the bedpans.
Right.
That saved them having to hire cleaners. We actually did all that ourselves. And yet these people were paying their way to be there.
Of course. And okay, yeah. have they been called to account for their crimes? Has this come to the attention of the media? Is there anything that's going on in relation to that particular group?
Well, I know in Scotland there is a big class action, and it's been going on for years, and they've taken it to the High Court, and this is to do with Nazareth House.
Right.
Same nuns as what we had, because they moved in this Ireland, England, Scotland, New Zealand, and Australia. And it's the same nun, so, you know, you could probably Google that if you wanted to, because there's a lot going on over there.
Right.
But over here, not a lot has happened. There has been a class action. I was in that class action, and we were paid out a very small sum, but that was
okay.
It.
Right.
Nobody's been made accountable.
So there was a class action, so it has been acknowledged that there was abuse going on.
At 7 people, at like 6 or 7 girls at that time, going way back to the late 90s.
But you're saying the payouts were pretty small.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm still meeting up with Nazareth girls.
Yeah.
And got some of their lives. And there's so many that have committed suicide. Yeah, heaps of suicides. It's unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, the percentage of suicide amongst forgotten Australians is far, far higher than the wider community.
And the suicide often happens years and years later, right? Like, it's sort of, they're carrying things throughout their lives that is just so much of a burden that they end up killing themselves, right?
Yeah, well, they've been told all their life they're useless, they're hopeless, they've been bashed around. I mean, they stay institutionalised. See, I'm still institutionalised, even though I've kind of got over a lot of things. I still do some funny little things. I'm a real clean freak. I can't help that because we were always made to scrub floors. Everything had to be spotless. We were down scrubbing floors at 6 and 7 years of age.
Right.
You know, there's still things that don't leave you. And you become, like, obsessive.
Yeah, and that level of conditioning is really, really powerful. Although, you know, in some cases you seem to have survived it. You seem to have triumphed over it. We've got about 1 minute left, Gabriel, but any just quick things you'd like to say to sort of finish off?
Well, I'd like to see some adequate services put in place to help a lot of these forgotten Australians from the past. I'd also like people to become accountable so that those that are in foster care today will think twice about, you know, molesting or abusing children today. They will see examples from the past. This kid might come back for me.
Absolutely.
You know, when you put examples forward, then the people of today will think twice who would.
Absolutely.
You know, it will become a deterrent.
And, you know, justice needs to be done and needs to be seen to be done. So I hope this Royal Commission does occur. And well, sorry, we are going to have to go. I'm so sorry, Gabriel. We're at the end of the hour. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back next week. It's been great. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Gabriel.
Was that okay?
Yeah, it was superb. Really good. Really good.
Oh, thanks. Hey, is this someone where I can listen to a recording?
Yes, I'll have the archive posted on the network's website here in a little while. Just maybe about another half an hour.
Thanks.
Or so.
And listen, thanks so much for letting me speak out about this.
Oh, thank you.
And I mean, it's good that you're out there getting the truth out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take it easy, Gabriel. I'll talk to you again, I hope. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Keep up the good food.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye. Good job, Gerward.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, I'll speak to you next week. Take it easy.
Okay.
Thanks.
All righty. Bye-bye. Thank you.